This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In March of this year, Governor Shumlin said the state will abandon Vermont Health Connect if it fails to meet two key milestones. The first arrives at the end of this month and centers on the change of circumstance functionality that has thus far eluded technology contractors. But Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott said he thought Vermont should pull the plug earlier, despite the fact that the state has spent well over $100 million so far to build it.
There comes a point in time, we all face them in our personal lives and business lives, when you have to know to say when and to stop digging. When you find yourself in a hole, you have to stop digging at some point.
Today on the program, we're joined by Phil Scott. We'll be talking about Vermont Health Connect, the website related to the health exchange, as well as Scott's take on some of the bills that made it through the legislature this year. And we'll look ahead to his priorities for the 2016 session. Phil Scott, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you.
So let me ask you first, do you still think we should ditch the current website for Vermont Health Connect?
Well, based on some of our conversations with our neighbors in Connecticut, I went to Rhode Island to meet with our Connecticut Lieutenant Governor and also the Lieutenant Governor of Rhode Island to talk about some Northeast-type coalition where we could actually attach to their exchange, because Connecticut's in a unique position where theirs is functioning very well. And, in fact, they've helped Maryland out quite a bit. And they had some interest in allowing us to attach to their system. So I still think that that's the approach we should take in the future, because even if we get our exchange working, which we may or may not do, after spending about $150 million doing so, I'm afraid of the future in terms of the maintenance costs and so forth. Because if we have a one of a kind system, that we are going to be beholden to somebody else to fix and maintain, that could be cost us a great deal of money. Whereas with Connecticut, if we could go in with them in some capacity, those maintenance costs could be reduced substantially, in my opinion.
So I want to ask you about how you think that might work for us to go in with Connecticut. But just to make sure that we completely understand, you're saying that regardless of what we do, you don't think Vermont should continue to have its own proprietary state-run and state-designed healthcare exchange website.
Well, the Connecticut system would still give us that ability to be autonomous to Connecticut. It wouldn't be going on to their system. It would be using their structure, which is a totally different animal. And I don't pretend to be somebody that's an expert on this, but they are so confident that this could be helpful to us in Vermont. They came up again after our meeting in Rhode Island, and came up and gave us a demonstration and actually showed us how autonomous and how unique this could look and appear. It would be our own system with our own plans. It was just utilize their structure based cloud-based without having to invest in all the infrastructure here in Vermont. So,
but it would require us to ditch what we're currently using.
That's correct.
And what would be the cost of a transfer over to that system, that cloud-based system?
They're saying somewhere in the vicinity of $20 million, somewhere in there. There's different costs associated with different things. But they said that they felt that we could, with some prompting from their governor and our governor, with writing to the feds, that they would allow us to utilize whatever federal money is left over at this point in time. We have up to $200 million, I believe, for this project. That we could utilize that money to move forward. So again, I don't believe it would be state money. It would be federal money. Which where we could create this system and have a fully functional exchange at that point.
And have you spoken with our governor, Governor Shumlin, about that possibility?
Well, we had representatives from the administration there for the demonstration. I wouldn't say that they were as enthusiastic as I might have been and others, but I think it piqued their interest. I believe that there is some portions that they believe could be used specifically for the small business portion of the exchange. But again, I believe, and I think the Connecticut folks believe that we could do a lot more than they anticipate. But we'll I think what we should do at this point, the governor has made some statements about a benchmark reaching a certain platform by the end of May. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we hit that first.
And then there was another benchmark at the end of October. Do you think we should wait until that benchmark is reached before we decide?
Yeah, I think I think there was some deadlines involved. But again, I think we should recognize the fact that it's not functioning for everyone right now. I think we should assess very quickly. There's language in the budget bill. When we went to Rhode Island, I brought Senators Kitchell and Ash with me. They were there as well when we had the demonstration with Joint Fiscal there in the room as well. So we'll see what happens. But I think that. I think that they're fairly open minded to whatever we can do to make this functional for Vermont.
Today on Vermont Edition, we are talking with Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott. We've been discussing his take on how Vermont could repair its damaged Health Exchange website. We're also going to talk about childhood immunizations, the budget bill, other issues that he was working on at the State House this year. And listeners, if you have a question for Phil Scott, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your questions, post your comments on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Lieutenant Governor Scott, given that we've got two comments on this, and one of them is connected to your work on the Health Exchange website, I'm just going to put them forth right now and we can get them out of the way, but I'm hoping you'll give me a straight answer. We got a note from Thomas who says, as you continue to acquire a growing base of support statewide and continue to exhibit leadership qualities with your proactive efforts to pursue collaborative solutions for Vermont Health Connect, would you consider honoring our great state by running for governor? And before you answer, Scott also posted on Facebook saying, everyone wants to know if Phil will run for governor in the next cycle. Personally, and I'm very left-leaning in my positions, but I think he's a shoo-in. He's shown he can work with both sides, and he's willing to look at ideas from both sides of the political spectrum, not just dance the party line like most others.
Well, I'm certainly considering it, but I'm a far long ways from making that decision. I think it's something that you have to really internalize, and you have to base your decision less on ego and less on the ability to win, and make sure that it's something that you think that you should do for the benefit of all Vermont and Vermonters. So, you know, I have a long ways to go before making that decision, but again, I'm considering, and I know I have to make a decision by the end of the year.
I won't belabor this point because you have said you're just considering it. But when you look at what would go into deciding, yes, that you think what you have is the right stuff for Vermont and for Vermont voters, who do you talk to about that, and what's going to be the determining factor?
Well, the people that have supported me over the last 14 or 15 years, part of my core group from being in the Senate initially, and those friends and advisors, people that I trust in terms of decision making, and certainly my family has to be part of the equation as well, because this changes your life. It's not something that you should do for your own ego. It should be something that you go in with your eyes wide open and with ideas on how you can make Vermont a more prosperous and better place.
And would Governor Shumlin's decision to run again or not run again factor into your decision in any way?
Not in this case. No, I think this is a decision that I'll have to make regardless of whether Governor Shumlin runs or not.
Let's talk a little bit more about some of the issues that were prominent in the State House in this previous half of the biennium. A last-minute budget deal allowed the legislative session to end without any further wrangling between the legislature and the governor. The main issue was in how to raise revenue through tax changes and increases. The governor, as we know, has steadfastly said he does not support a number of tax increases or deductions. So there was a compromise at the end. There are no deeper penalties penalties on employers who don't offer health care to their employees. There's a small cap on mortgage interest deduction, but people will still be able to deduct charitable donations. After the deal passed, House Minority Leader Don Turner expressed a lot of frustration, and he said that the governor and the democratically controlled legislature are out of touch, that they aren't reining in spending enough. What's your take?
Well, things were very fluid at the end of the session. I think decisions were made over in the last 3 days that probably should have been talked about during the session. Having said that, I think that when we came out of the election, if we look back at the election, I think Vermonters and those who voted spoke loud and clear about their frustration about the economy, about the affordability of Vermont. And they didn't feel as though they could afford to spend any more. They didn't have any extra income. And as I've stated numerous times in my travels around the state, it's about those folks that are working two and three jobs, trying to make ends meet, but not having the ability to do so with the rising property taxes and rising just costs associated with their everyday lives. I think they spoke loud and clear that they didn't want us to spend any more. They didn't want us to further burden them. And I think in one sense we failed in that regard. But at the same time, when you look at how we started the session, the governor had proposed a payroll tax of $90 million. And when we ended, it was 33 or 34 million. So far cry from where we started. But at the same time, the bottom line is we spent more and we raised taxes.
When you say far cry from where we started there on the payroll tax and how to close the gap between what doctors, what the cost of healthcare is and what doctors are reimbursed by the federal government, how, though, do you get to a point where people have access to healthcare, where doctors are reimbursed at a reasonable rate without spending the money? What's your solution to fixing the problem that most people agree is a problem and needs to be fixed?
Well, obviously, we have to continue to support that divide with Medicaid, underfunding of Medicaid, and that should be done through the general fund. And again, my points have been over the last, and I've been consistent over the last four years about my feeling that we need to focus more on the economy. We need to divert our attention to that for 5 or 10 years from now. We have a shrinking population in terms of our workforce. It's stagnant in terms of overall population, but we have a demographic issue. And so if we don't pay more attention to the economy, we are going to continue to suffer these budgetary problems in the near future. And so I feel have failed to spend enough time talking about how do we fix the economy? How do we pay more attention? How do we bring a more business and allow the businesses that are here to flourish more than they are at this point in time?
You were supportive of legislation this year, the economic development legislation, S-138, making it easier for entrepreneurs to access capital, repeals the cloud tax, gives assistance to first-time home buyers, invests in marketing Vermont. So do you see that as a step in the right direction?
Absolutely. I don't think it's enough, but I think it's a step in the right direction. It's a first good step, and I hope that people don't think that this is the end, because it really is just the beginning. It's constant attention. Our economy is so fragile at this point in time and we're in triage. I believe that we're just looking at this, trying to assess the damages and take care of the worst first. And so what we need is a better economic plan for the future. And I believe that S-138, the economic bill, had a lot of good things in it. And people did listen as we went across the state with the Vermont Economy Pitch sessions that we had. We had 6 or 7 of those. And a lot of the ideas that came forward as a result of those pitch sessions, I think, were put into legislation. So I thought it was, again, a good first step. But when you think about The bill itself was had about $450,000 attached to it, which sounds like a lot of money. But when you're talking about marketing, $100,000 for marketing in Canada, and another $250,000 to market Vermont in a different way, it doesn't go very far. And so, again, a good first step, but certainly have a long ways to go.
We're talking with Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott today, and if you have a question about the issues that were important to you in this legislative session that just ended, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. When we come back, we're going to tick through a couple of the high-profile bills that passed this year, get the Lieutenant Governor's take. We're also going to look ahead to 2016 and see what he plans to focus on in the second half of the biennium. Again, your thoughts are welcome. Go to the Vermont Edition Facebook page or call 1-800-639-2211. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're getting Phil Scott's take on Vermont politics. The lieutenant governor had to break a tie in the Senate this year. He's been actively trying to get a bead on the needs of business owners in the state and thinking about job creation. And we're asking him to assess the legislation that was up for debate in the legislature this year. If you have a question, you can post it on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call us. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. Lieutenant Governor Scott, let's tick through some of the bills that were up for debate this year that passed that were pretty high profile and see how you feel about them now at the end of the session. Continuing the physician-assisted death law. Good thing, bad thing?
Well, my feelings weren't supportive of the law to begin with, but this change or going to make sure there's safeguards in the bill, if we're going to have it, I thought was a good thing to include. So, all in all, when it came to the end, I believe that this was something that was needed in the bill.
A $616 million transportation bill. It was signed by the governor today. It includes more than $100 million each for paving, for bridge repair, and for town highway programs. Good bill?
Yeah, very good bill. Very well balanced. Could use more money always. I don't think we're catching up at like we should, but it all takes money. So we're going to have to look in the future in terms of how do we bring in revenue differently, because we're using the per gallon tax on gas to support transportation, and as fuel mileage increases, people are using less gas. So we have to look at maybe a mileage tax or something else in the future. But all in all, I thought it was a good bill.
Eliminating the philosophic exemption for the mandatory childhood immunizations.
Again, it wasn't an issue, as I think we brought it up, or it was a question from you during the campaign. I had said that I was supportive of not having the philosophical exemption. But having said that, I wasn't promoting that coming up to the legislature this year. But had it come to a tie vote, I would have voted in favor of not having the philosophical exemption. So all in all, while I didn't think it was a huge priority this session, I would have voted that way.
Do you think that the legislature should also have eliminated the religious exemption, which also doesn't require something as formal as a doctor's note, for example, which is required for a medical exemption?
No, I think they struck the right balance in that regard, and that probably should stay in place at this point in time.
Let's talk a little bit about the education bill. This asks school districts to move into 900 student education districts, so it would merge our school districts, of which I think there are 277, into these bigger education districts. It phases out small school grants and the ghost student formula, although for schools that merge into these bigger districts, there are some ways to preserve some of that funding. What do you think still needs to be done to help both improve education and educational outcomes for students and to curb spending?
Well, again, I think what the bill ended up coming coming about was something to look in the future. It may or may not reduce costs. I think it's a step in the right direction. But at the same time, when you look at the immediate needs, when you look at the frustration, again, listening to Vermonters about property taxes, that they're feeling really overwhelmed with the amount of money they have to spend. And when you consider that we're educating less students in Vermont, about 30,000 less than they were maybe 10, 15 years ago, and we have the same operating, the same overhead. So what we need to do really is to reduce our spending. And that's where it's going to have the biggest effect. And we have to, again, reduce our spending, of course, without reducing the quality of education. And that's a tough balance to adhere to. But the reality is we're spending too much on our overhead.
So what do you think? Move into fewer schools, fewer but bigger schools?
Well, I think that could be part of it. But again, I think you have to look at the number of educators, not just teachers, but paraeducators and so forth per student. Have increased dramatically or because of the reduced population of students. So, again, we can't continue down that road at the present rate. And as I've said before, and I keep going back to the economy, but we have a huge demographic issue in this state. We've lost 30,000 people out of the category from 25 to 45, and that's our working class. So those are the folks that pay pay taxes. They're the ones that have families. They buy homes. They would fill our empty schoolrooms with children, and that's we need to reinvigorate the economy in order to fix some of the other issues that we're facing. So I keep going back to that, but I think it's part of the solution as well.
So meaning what? You mean draw more people in here so we have more of a population of homeowners and of school-aged kids who are at our schools?
Right. Absolutely. We have a shrinking workforce, and we have, again, a shrinking population in the center, in the meat of our population. And we need to fix that. We need to have more people come here, not just to visit Vermont, but actually stay here and be included in our economy, bring more revenue in rather organically rather than by forcing a different tax structure, which just increases the burden on individuals. So, again, I think that if we can reinstill the economy, really bolster the economy, I think that we'll bring in more revenue, again, rather organically and naturally, rather than a different tax structure.
That in some ways seems like a pretty long-term solution. When you talk about things like paraeducators and how many paraeducators are in small schools, part of that is an educational requirement for students who need paraeducators, and you're not going to be able to change that number if you still have a small school with a small number of students. So it sounds like in that case you are saying we need bigger schools where the students are consolidated so that you have an equal consolidation of staff members.
Well, I think you have to look at a short-term and a long-term fix simultaneously. You can't do either one without drastically affecting the students. And again, we have to continue to make sure that we keep our eyes focused on students first and what their needs are. But again, at the same time, if we look at that long-term approach as well as the short-term approach, we may have to. There may be some restructuring so that we do have some economies of scale. So I think looking in both ways, looking short-term and long-term simultaneously is part of the answer.
We're talking today to Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott. And listeners, if you want to ask him a question about the initiatives he supports around the state, things that he thinks the state could be doing better, our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your note online on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Donna is calling in from South Burlington. Hi, Donna. Go right ahead.
Hi. Well, I'm happy you're having this conversation with the Lieutenant Governor. I think it's a fresh voice and one we need to hear about economic development for sure. My question was a little bit on a related topic of defined benefit programs and the amount of money that we're supposed to have put aside for retirement for state, you know, municipal and teachers' retirement benefits and healthcare benefits and retirement, and how often it's very difficult to keep up with, and often they aren't fully funded. And since there are almost no private businesses actually enjoy defined benefit retirement plans, we all have 401ks now. Is that a weight on the state budget that somehow needs to be discussed in future labor contracts?
Donna, let me ask you before we go to the Lieutenant Governor, what would you like to see, given that the people who maybe were hired 20 or 30 years ago signed a contract saying, you know, these are the benefits that you're getting. Are you saying you'd like to see those benefits that they were guaranteed 20 years ago renegotiated, or just moving forward? Because the new plans certainly are different than they were 20 years ago, say.
Yeah, well, I think you just have to look at it in terms of overall fairness, because, you know, the interest I can get on a 401k plan or, you know, certainly has reduced my overall savings. You know, I don't have as much to retire on as what I was hoping to,
mm-hmm.
and yet the defined benefits aren't. You know, I mean, they're getting everything they were promised 30 years ago, and nobody else is.
Okay, so Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott, what do you think?
Well, again, I think it brings up a great topic and something that is a burden in our future, and something that I think that we don't talk enough about because it really isn't one of those topics that everyone understands. But we do have a bit of an unfunded liability out there in terms of retirement and so forth, and we haven't fully funded that. But getting to the point of whether we should be looking in a different direction, I'd say yes, everything should be on the table. But in terms of whether they should be looking back to those that signed on, so to speak, and made an agreement, a contractual agreement with the state that's what they would receive, I don't think you can do that. And I think, you know, I've talked a lot about over the last year or two about what I see as a lack of faith and trust in government. It's not unique to Vermont. It's happening all over the nation. And I think that's something that we have to always be mindful of, that, you know, a deal is a deal. And I try and do that in my private life, my business life, and try and fulfill my obligation and do what I say I'm going to do. And part of that in terms of this is to tell state employees, okay, as we move forward from this day forward, we're going to have to do things differently. We can't afford to do it the way we've done it before. But I don't think you can pull the rug out from underneath those that have agreed to that in the past.
Let's take a call from Mark in Stowe. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor.
Good morning.
Last week on this show, the governor was asked by someone who wants to retire in Vermont, why would I do that? I can't afford to do that with the tax system and how that'll impact me living here in Vermont. And his answer was, just stick with us. We're a great place to be, and we need your money. That was his answer. I want to understand from you, Lieutenant Governor, why would anybody want to be able to retire in Vermont with the tax system we have?
Yeah, it's a bit of a struggle, admittedly. It's we all know that Vermont is a great place to live. You know, I was born here, raised here. I don't intend to leave. But I know how tempted some people are, and I know how mobile people are these days. And when you look at that, it's not just for those that are retiring, because I think what we're facing in Vermont is a crisis of affordability. You know, property taxes, everything, all the burdens that are placed on our citizens make it difficult for them to stay here. They're working two and three jobs and just not making ends meet. So what happens is they move elsewhere. And when I talk about that category, that 25 to 45 category where according to the last census, we've lost 30,000 people out of that. I think what happens is they get out of school, and then they're faced with an incredible amount of student debt. And then they have to make decisions about they have to pay those bills, they have to live, they have to find they have to rent or buy some place, and then they have to pay property taxes on top of that. And when they do the math, it doesn't work out. And so then they're faced with either working those two and three jobs, just trying to get by, or moving elsewhere. And I think that that mobility is a huge issue for us. And again, I keep going back, and I sound like a broken record, but it's all about the economy. It's all about putting our best foot forward and all getting on the same page and realizing that if we don't get this working, then we're all going to suffer. We need money to in order to provide a safety net for a lot of folks, but we also need to create an environment that's conducive to growth and not paving across Vermont, but actually making it profitable to stay in Vermont and for some large and small and existing businesses.
Okay, given that, Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott, what are your priorities for the second half of the biennium for the 2016 portion of the session?
Well, again, it doesn't change much with me. I think that's one thing that I'm fairly consistent, and I'm going to continue to talk about the economy. I'm going to continue to ask legislators to look at every bill that comes across their desk and ask themselves, does this help or hurt the economy? What could we do together? If we're all on the same page, pulling in the same direction, what can we do to help ourselves? The unfortunate part is we have a lot of problems facing us. But on the other side, you know, we have it's in our hands to change destiny. And we can do this if we all work together. And I feel confident that we can do that. But it's going to take everyone with all hands on deck in order to create a different approach to our future.
When you and the governor were both first elected to the positions that you hold now, the governor put you in his cabinet pretty quickly. You were quoted in VT Digger last year, though, as saying that, you know, the governor seems to act one way with one person and one way with another. You said, quote, "I keep one eye open and I don't let myself get completely sucked in." What's your relationship like with the governor now?
Well, we're friendly, cordial. We talk every now and then, not as much as we did in the beginning. And I think politics has a way of creating that divide, which is so very unfortunate because we live in such a small state. But again, if I call him up, he'll take my call and we can talk. And I still want to work together. We're still in this together. And we need to, I think we have common goals about prosperity for Vermont and Vermonters. So I'll do my part in trying to make Vermont a better place to live and do business.
That's Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much, Jane.
Coming up, why Vermont is hosting a Great Lakes Conference and what lake scientists all over the world can learn from one another. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Champlain may never have been able to gain Great Lake status, but that's not stopping Vermont from hosting the International Conference on Great Lakes Research this week. Organizers assure us they mean lakes that are great, as in large, not just the five Laurentian lakes we normally associate with the name. And it turns out that the struggles we've been dealing with in Lake Champlain, like funding cleanup and battling blue-green algae, are problems facing other lake communities as well. Here to bring us up to date on what's being discussed at the conference is UVM Fisheries Professor Ellen Marsden. Professor Marsden, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So this isn't a single five Great Lakes conference. This is all lakes are welcome that are large and worldly.
That's absolutely right. And the Association of Great Lakes Research is emphasizing that this is about large lakes of the world. And we have representatives at the conference from China and from Rwanda, from Canada, of course, so a number of countries.
But it's only the second time that the conference has been held outside of the quote-unquote Great Lakes region, right? So why is EPM
outside
hosting?
The Great Lakes? Because of Lake Champlain. We've been promoting Lake Champlain and emphasizing to colleagues that we work with collaboratively that this is a great lake to do research in. I have a colleague who jokes that it's a trial-sized lake, but it is a very good lake for doing studies that might be intractable in such large systems such as the five larger Great Lakes.
Give me some examples of what kinds of experiments and what kinds of issues you can tackle that are sort of contained in Lake Champlain.
Well, one of the biggest issues, of course, that we're seeing in the Great Lakes and Lake Champlain is too much phosphorus, cyanobacteria blooms. They're generally known as harmful algal blooms. We've got the same problems the Great Lakes do, but again, on a smaller scale. And it's very much a give and take. We're learning from them. They're learning from us. Fisheries issues, too. Smaller populations that we can get perhaps a bigger handle on. Whereas, say, in Lake Erie, you might say, this fish population just in the Western Basin, as distinct from the Eastern Basin, we can talk about whole lake studies a bit more easily.
We don't see Lake Champlain operating in a vacuum, though, either in terms of the issues that the lake faces or even as an isolated lake with no ability for any invasive species to get in from other places or for us to send things that shouldn't be out into other parts of our lake system in the U.S. Do you have a lot of conversations happening about the interconnectedness of lakes and all of these problems and how to contain them?
Absolutely. And one of the sessions is exactly about that. It's exotic species transfers between basins and how to prevent that. So many of the exotic species we have, we got from the Great Lakes through the Champlain Canal or potentially through the Chambly and the Richelieu River. So we have to stay in communication with each other to say, what might we be sending them? What might they be sending us? Through overland transport as well as through aquatic transport.
And any solutions coming through?
There's certainly discussion about various ways of preventing transport through the canals. We're actually protected by the virtue of our smallness that we don't get the ballast water transfers that the Great Lakes have. So they get this international shipping coming in through the St. Lawrence that bypasses the Richelieu, of course. And so we only have about 50 exotic species relative to the Great Lakes having almost 200.
Only 50.
Only 50, and we're hoping to keep it at 50.
Vermont Agency of Natural Resources Secretary Deb Markowitz gave an introductory speech to the more than 600 scientists and officials who are here for this conference. What was her message?
What she was advertising or highlighting and getting a great deal of respect for it is our new bill upping our clean water standards for Lake Champlain, which is substantially different from the older EPA regulations. And it's a great move forward and something I think the Great Lakes will look to and follow. If we can do it in a state this small, in a lake this small, definitely we're taking the lead in pushing that forward to the other lakes.
So you agree with that? I mean, that's certainly the administration's stance, that we're doing a great thing with this new bill. We are going to clean up Lake Champlain. We will not have the EPA on our back as much as we have before. But that's not a position that scientists have to agree with. But you do?
It's definitely a start. What we have to keep in mind, it's not the only piece. And one of the, or several of the sessions are highlighting the role of nitrogen, which has been traditionally under-emphasized or overlooked in freshwater. Traditionally, we think of phosphorus as being the major controller of algal blooms. It's the scarce nutrient that's being put in by humans and land use pouring off the landscape. And nitrogen, we thought of, oh, that's a problem mostly in marine systems. There are several sessions that are talking about nitrogen as a stimulant for algal blooms. We have to control that as well. So whereas our new bill is addressing phosphorus, again, it's the start, it's not everything. And there are other sources of pollutants that this conference is emphasizing that we haven't even begun to regulate.
Yeah, when we talk about nitrogen, nitrogen is in many things, including urine. And so it is not a rare nutrient.
That's absolutely correct.
When you look at some of the issues and some of the pollution sources, we do talk a lot about phosphorus. Sometimes we talk about nitrogen. Some of the other things being discussed at this conference, though, are things like pharmaceuticals, which we've addressed several years ago on this show. And it's scary to think about pharmaceutical substances getting into our waterways, perhaps getting into some fish species. Are you finding more of that in Lake Champlain?
We're finding both pharmaceuticals, of course, in the wastewater streams, getting into the lake, beginning beginning to understand effects on fishes. The other big piece that's being emphasized in the Great Lakes and in oceans, and we're bringing to Champlain, is plastics. Microplastics, meaning the fragments of various plastic goods that get shattered, but also fibers. Just listening to a talk this morning about how many waterways have about 90% of their plastics are the fibers from clothing that are being shed. They're in the lint from your, presumably from your dryer, and very, very common in the waterways. And again, we know they're there. We are only beginning to understand what effect they might have on the ecology, on the wildlife. They're showing up in fish tissues. They're showing up in muscle tissues. So that's a whole new area of research that we're beginning to research and understand.
It all sounds very dire, though, when I start to think about it. Are there things that excite you and make you feel optimistic?
Yes. A lot of the emphasis on this conference is, our theme is new tools, new views. The new tools are very exciting. Better ways of detecting these contaminants, better ways of detecting algal blooms, more real-time detections of things like algal blooms. And having the tools to understand the problem, to quantify the problem, helps us address the problem.
Anything else that you're really excited about as a professor of fisheries?
I'm certainly very excited to have all these colleagues come to Lake Champlain and see what, pardon the words, what a great lake this is for doing research, and increase the collaborations here, bringing the scientific input here. I think people are very much appreciating how lovely the lake is and how lovely Vermont is. And that's just a joy to show off what our lake is like.
Yes, and no surprise that they're having it at this time of year. This is not a like late February kind of conference.
Absolutely.
Ellen Marsden is a professor of fisheries at UVM. She's taking part in the 58th International Conference on Great Lakes Research being held this week at the university. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And finally, another segment from our Live from the Fort series. Today, we hear from multi-instrumentalist and songwriter Justin Levinson of Vergennes. Levinson attended the Berklee School of Music for trumpet and ended up getting a scholarship for songwriting. He has released 5 albums, with singles reaching the top of the CMJ music charts and landing in heavy rotation on XM Radio. On this song, Let You Go, Levinson plays piano and is joined by Colin McCaffrey on guitar.
Just sticks in the wind. Watch him cheerlead for your love. A tightrope walk, the world strapped to my back. And know what strangers we've become. So march right out that door and find what you've been looking for. Tell me that you're done so I can let you go. You've gotta tell me that you're done so I can let you go. Let you go, 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 let you go. And constellations will fall to the ground. If these kites are not entwined, and all that's left will be arms and legs, and our two souls made alive. So use your words as swords. If I'm just bringing down your world, and tell me that you're done so I can let you go. Gotta tell me that you're done, 'cause if you set fire to this town, I won't bring my white flag out. I won't bring my white flag out. 'Cause if you've had enough, you can tell the world. Let me go, let me go. Let me go, let me go. Let me go. I guess the love didn't weigh out the pain. So tell me that you're drunk so I can let you go. You've gotta tell me that you're drunk so I can let you go. Oh, you gotta tell me that you're drunk so I can let you go. Let you go, let you go, oh. Let you go, let you go. Let you go, let you go, oh. Let you go, let you go. Let you go, let you go.
That's Justin Levinson singing Let You Go from VPR's Live from the Fort series. If you're a Vermont artist or know one we should feature in the series, send an email to comments@vpr.net. Now, you might have heard that Bernie Sanders is running for president. His official announcement at Waterfront Park in Burlington on Tuesday was the news story of the week in this state. Tomorrow on Vermont Edition, we'll look at the impression Sanders made on both the hometown crowd and the national media as he launches an underdog attempt at winning the Democratic nomination. Tell us what you think of Sanders' message and his chances. Write to vermontedition@vpr.net and join us tomorrow. Our show is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Singeri, and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Sarah Matthews and Amanda Shepherd. Liam Connors directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. And our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.